Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of Into the Blue Zone. On today's episode, we have special lovely guest, Miss Liz Murphy.
Hello.
Liz, thank you so much for taking time out of your ultra busy, productive lifestyle and joining the show today. If you could wave for your camera and my camera, we are on Instagram Live and a plant-based production. A couple special shout outs here to Kind Humans. If you're looking to shop, please check out the link in my bio and get 10% off on all products through Kind Humans. And it's been a really good reminder to myself to be more kind. So I'm really enjoying being an ambassador and associated with Kind Humans. Enough about me, Liz. You are the founder of the incredible movement Sustainability is Sexy. And I can't wait for you to explain to the listeners and audience what that's all about if they don't know already. And if they do, I'm sure you could rehash and go over some other things. You also do your own plant-based cooking show, program, website, Santosha Nutrition. And you are one of the first like hardcore plant-based vegan people that I've had on one of the 13 episodes. So I'm really excited to get more into the food as the company and business is called a plant-based production. So Liz, thanks so much for joining the show.
Absolutely.
And let's kind of kick it off. Can you just describe what it is you do? And, you know, let's backtrack for 1 second. We just met virtually 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So this is our first interaction together.
And it is. What an interaction to have.
Yeah. I mean, we're recording in a time capsule for eternity, essentially, as long as the memory card and the SD card transfer over to Instagram and all the technology. So we just met on Zoom 2-3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I went to one of your programs and then we just chatted in the backyard for about 20-30 minutes. And here we are.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's so fun when you meet that like-minded person and you just kind of click right away and it's really easy to engage.
I'm so grateful to be here, so thank you so much for having me.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, what is Santosha? Let's start with Santosha and then we'll go to Sustainability is Sexy.
Yeah, I like that because that's kind of the way that it was in the regular world timeline anyway. So Santosha is, let's start with the word itself because I think that's a really important insight into what the business is. So Santosha is a Sanskrit word, which means contentment. And it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to name the business. And once I found that word, it just immediately felt right because that's my goal for myself and for anyone that I work with in the business and eventually hopefully the world is for all of them to find contentment. And you know, I'm trying to accomplish that through plant-based food. And so Santosha Nutrition is a service-based business with a few product lines as well, that offers education to the community about becoming a more positive part of their local food system. So I'm here in San Diego, so I focus a lot on the San Diego food system, but the goal is to, no matter where you are in the world, is that Santosha can offer you insight and education for your own food system. Because at the end of the day, we are, you know, the only way we're going to be able to move forward is moving back towards locality and focusing on, you know, our community food systems. And so we do that through different services like cooking classes, both virtual and in person, farm to table experiences, whether that's dinners or maybe some classes on site at local farms, and conscious catering, you know, anything that really puts us in front of the community and working with them to showcase how plant-based eating in conjunction with a healthy food system can really make an impact both on your body and your local community. And so to me, that means there's a three-step process. It's buying local food, so supporting your local farmers, cooking delicious plant-based meals, and then composting back to the earth. So it's a full cycle that we all need to step into and become a part of in order to make a positive impact and lower our impact on climate change. And yeah, so it's we do a lot. And the products, we have two product lines with Santosha as well. There's a new cookbook that I released in the end of 2020 that's 100% plant-based and gluten-free. And it's, we were speaking a little bit earlier, it's an incredibly surreal feeling to have a cookbook. So I'm very, very happy with that. So that's available now. And then we also create plant-based healing broths. So we can different broths, and we have those available at different shops and markets, and also for delivery in the San Diego area.
Yeah. And where can people buy your cookbook?
So they can buy it direct on the website. There are a few local shops that carry it as well. You can always find, like, DM me on Instagram if you want to buy it and support a local shop in addition to buying the cookbook. But my website, just santoshanutrition.com, has the cookbook available, and you might find us at some local markets and things like that too.
And then your Instagram account?
Santosha Nutrition.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Santosha Nutrition. Find Liz on Instagram or at our website. And you talked about kind of the three-step process on supporting local. Mm-hmm. I do a pretty good job with that.
Great.
And then make delicious food. I eat and make delicious food.
Perfect.
Composting is definitely the next step for myself. And can you just share a little bit about what is the process of composting for myself and for everyone else who's, like, just throwing away excess?
Absolutely. So, you know, and I'm still learning myself, I will say, like, it's composting has been and will continue to be a learning process, I think, for everyone. And what's amazing about the world that we live in, and then especially people that are here local in the San Diego community, is the amount of resources that are popping up everywhere for no matter where you are in your learning or your ability to compost, there's a resource for you to help fight food waste. So food waste is creeping up on us as one of the number one impacts of climate change. Let me see if I can get this statistic correct. If food waste in the world was its own country, it would be number three behind the US and China in greenhouse gas emissions.
And can you just describe exactly what food waste looks like and you're talking about?
So food waste is going to be any manner of organic waste. Organic not meaning the label organic that we see in the stores, but just meaning carbon-based matter going into a landfill. It's basically a loss of resources. And then in addition to a loss of resources, it's now causing excessive greenhouse gas emissions from the landfill. So that's going to be anything in the entirety process of our food system, from the growing in the farms. There's food waste at the farm level. There's food waste at the transport, the manufacturer level, the restaurants and industry level, and then, of course, residential. And actually, a surprising fact that a lot of people don't realize, because we see these mass industrial types of food waste at a restaurant, for example, or even at a farm, but the number one contributor is residential. And so the impact that we can make at our homes in curbing our food waste is going to be exponential. And so that's everything that you see going into the trash and therefore ending up in the landfill that is organic or carbon-based material. So all your food.
So can you elaborate a little more on residential waste, since that is more directly impactful for people listening that may not be, like, involved with the bigger
waste?
Like, for me, I have an orange and I throw away the orange peel.
Right.
Or a banana, avocado, anything that has...
Anything. Yeah, anything. And I mean, it can be leftovers out of your fridge. It can be, you know, you got takeout and you're cleaning.
Not the container.
Maybe the container, if it does end up being one of the biodegradable compostable containers, then it is going to. So that's a whole nother conversation that maybe we'll get into a little bit today, because I'm pretty passionate about educating people about that kind of stuff as we start to see that become more prevalent in a lot of restaurants, is learning what that means and how you're supposed to dispose of it. But in regards to food waste, it is everything you just talked about. I mean, obviously, it sounds like you and we know that you eat a very clean whole foods diet. So yours is probably going to be things like peels and peels. You know, stuff like that. But a lot of people, it's, you know, stuff that's coming out of their fridge or leftovers from their takeout or, you know, anything and everything. And it's happening in our workplaces and it's happening in our homes. And it's a very much, just with anything else, you know, plant-based eating is a perfect example. It's a mind shift to figuring out the reasoning behind why we need to fight food waste, the benefits of composting. And once you understand that, then it makes it so much easier to make the steps to stop. And when I look at food waste and I educate about food waste, like I mentioned, you've obviously got the environmental impacts. So you have, when it goes into the landfill, It can take a head of lettuce. This is just a something I like to share with people. It can take a head of lettuce in a landfill up to 25 years to decompose. The reason for that is because in a landfill, it's an anaerobic decomposition process versus aerobic. Anaerobic meaning without oxygen, aerobic meaning with oxygen. So a natural decomposition process for anything from a human body to a piece of food, anything that's carbon-based, it needs oxygen to decompose in a natural process. In a landfill, you have tons and tons of waste being pushed down on top of itself every single day. And so there's no oxygen getting to a lot of those, to any of the organic material attempting to decompose. So that entire time, that entire 25 years, that one head of lettuce is letting off greenhouse gases as it decomposes, which is what's causing the problem, the mass scale problem. And so in your home, when you're throwing it into your trash can, we have this outlook in our society today of out of sight, out of mind. Once it ends up in a trash can, we don't ever see it again. You know, it goes on a truck, it ends up, we know it goes to a landfill, but you know, if you've never been to a landfill or really thought about what a landfill is, you just don't think about it ever again. And the benefits of composting, of course, outside of just keeping that food out of the landfill, is that we're creating a new resource to grow new, more nutrient-dense food. Whether you're gardening at home or sharing that compost with somebody else to put in their garden, it is providing nutrients back to the soil and creating a new resource for regenerative and truly sustainable farming agricultural practices, both large and small scale. And composting can seem really daunting. I think that's obviously, I'd say the number one reason that a lot of people don't even want to attempt to start is because it can seem like, okay, I don't have the time or the energy to build, you know, this compost bin at my house. I don't have the room at my house. But as I mentioned, what I get very excited about is that there are so many resources here in San Diego and everywhere if you start to look. I live in an apartment in San Diego, as many people do, because it's, you know, it's a city. And I do not have the space to have a full compost bin, nor do I have the soil to then utilize the compost once it is mature. So I actually utilize a service that's right here in Leucadia, in Encinitas, called the Solana Center for Environmental Innovation. It's a food cycle program where I fill my buckets and use the Bokashi breakdown system, which is a whole nother type of, it's not a type of composting, but it's actually a type of, it's what you use to save scraps. So Bokashi is a grain that has microbes added and is created. So I have my bucket. Instead of putting my food waste in my trash can, I put my food waste in my bucket. Once I have a couple inches of food scraps, I sprinkle some of this Bokashi bran. Those microbes begin to pickle and break down the food, essentially fermenting it. So I could have that bucket sitting there for 6 months before I take it back to the Solana Center, and it would be fine. It's not going to rot because that extra microbe that are in there actually fermenting or pickling the food instead of it rotting.
That's really efficient. I like that.
It's so efficient.
Like, I'm all about efficiency.
Yes.
And if you can, you know, throw some stuff in and you don't have to take it to another place or take it out to the sidewalk every week. And you're saying you just sprinkle some of this stuff on. Yep. Doesn't stink your house up?
No.
Or
so
flies or anything?
Nope. If you're doing it correctly, you know, it will have a smell. It's pickling the food and it's breaking it down. It's not going to be that common rotting, you know, smell that is associated with food that's breaking down or aerobically. So Bokashi bran is an anaerobic because it's being squished down without oxygen and breaking it down. But then I'm able to take those buckets back whenever I am able to. So like I said, it could be once a month, it could be every 6 months, depending on the amount of food waste that you produce. And then I take it to them and they compost it in their compost piles. And if at any time I do want some fresh composted soil, I can take that as a part of the program. And that's just one of many, many resources here in San Diego for different levels, experiences, and time and energies that people have to put towards composting. And I love sharing the available resources, because I want people to understand that no matter what you have, the time that you have, there's something for you to make an impact. Because the number one thing is lowering your amount of food waste. I haven't, you know, heard you talk about plant-based eating too much yet, but I'm excited to get into it a little bit more. But it's the way that I approach composting education is the same way I approach plant-based eating education. You know, people come to me looking for plant-based recipes and education through cooking classes and catering, and I'm teaching them to eat more plants. because if they eat more plants, that's going to make an impact on their body, on their community, on animal rights, all these things. And when they're ready, they're going to make the switch once they have the amount of education and realize how delicious it can be. And to me, it's the same with composting. You take baby steps, you start to learn how to lower your amount of food waste even before you start composting. Even, you know, you can practice different things in your kitchen to have less food waste to start, and that's going to make an impact.
Yeah, if you eat blueberries and tomatoes like I did this morning, you don't have food waste.
There's no food waste. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny, I have a tangerine tree in my backyard, and I picked them all and juiced them, and then I was like, what am I going to do with all the peels? And I'm like, I'm just going to throw them right back by the root of the tree and just let the fruit flies feast. And it actually disappeared quite quickly. And it was a big pile of, you know, compost.
Yeah.
So then the tree, I think, is going to love those nutrients.
Yeah. There's so many different ways, you know, simple ways, especially with someone that probably has a lesser amount of food waste.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very residential food waste is incredibly prevalent, and definitely the highest amount of food waste happening in any of those sectors of the industry. And so just taking a look, doing a little bit of a self audit, you know, to get started and seeing, oh, wow, like one of the biggest things for me as we made the switch in our household to using the food cycle program was realizing that, like, let alone with food waste, and then, of course, trying to be less waste in general with the lifestyle that we live, like, our trash should never smell because there's no organic material going in there. So, like, if we have friends over or something, sometimes they won't get on board with it or realize that we don't, you know, we try to educate them, but maybe they'll throw something in there and then the trash will start to smell, or like, I'll know, and I'm like, oh no, like something's in there that shouldn't be in there.
Like what? Give an example, like it's happened.
Like if we got takeout from somewhere, for example, we try to do our very best to, like, if we had the takeout containers, we'd scrape them into the compost afterwards, maybe even wash them out and dry them before putting them in either the recycle bin or the trash can, depending on what it's made out of. And not everyone's going to do that. They're, you know, they might just throw it into the trash without us noticing. And then it would, there would be organic material in our trash can, which is not something that we normally have in there. And so that's a really cool difference. You know, people associate trash with smell, but the only way that trash is going to smell is if there's organic material decomposing in that trash or in that dumpster.
Yeah. Cardboard doesn't smell too much.
No. Yes. And plastic doesn't smell.
Containers. Right.
It's like I said, a mind shift, but there are all these little things that you start to notice. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to tell everyone listening to compost, except I'm not doing it. So that'd be hypocritical of me. So I'm going to get started. I know there's a bin, there's like a farmer's market right here on Vulcan that I love and go to all the time.
Yeah.
And I always see like a sign up the compost group with a little purple bin. Yes. So I just go sign up, get the purple bin.
So talk to the compost group. We work with them a lot. I love their stand at the Lucadia Farmers Market, but make sure that it's a system that's going to work for you. Cause you mentioned that you liked the idea of the Bokashi system because it makes it easier. Yeah. That's through the Solana Center.
Oh, okay. So I can't go the other way through
you can
them.
Ask them, but I don't believe that they do Bokashi there. So you have to decide for your lifestyle, which resource is going to best fit it so that you have the best success possible.
Look at that. I'm learning all about composting. Never would have thought we'd start this way.
Yeah.
I'm glad we are. Okay, well, cool. So keep going more on who you are and what's your other program.
Sure.
And just kind of enlighten the people and also where you're from and kind of a little bit of your backstory as to, like, when did you become plant-based? Mm-hmm. So maybe where you're from.
Yeah, I'll start with a little bit of my background. So I grew up in Arizona, in the Phoenix area. And went to school at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, which is Northern Arizona. Lived there for about 6 years and then popped around a bit, studied abroad in Europe, and then moved to the Midwest for a year. Just, I like new experiences. So just anytime I could, even Indiana. And so I stayed there for a year before coming here to North County, San Diego. I've been in North County, San Diego since 2015. I believe. So 6 years, which is flown by. I can't believe that's coming out of my mouth. And I've always, since my college years, been working on what I would consider a better diet. I like, not from lack of my parents trying. My parents are, my dad's a gardener, so I grew up around this incredible garden. And, you know, my parents, we didn't go out to eat when I was growing up. It was all home-cooked meals, and my parents eat very healthy, and I don't know what it was about me. I was the pickiest eater. I would only eat bread and cheese, and like, no vegetables of any kind when I was growing up. And I still to this day, not sure why. But I did begin to, whether it was, it wasn't only diet related, but definitely impacted by that incredibly unhealthy and lack of nutrient diet that I was kind of on for most of my life until the age of 17 or 18. I experienced some pretty severe health issues that made me analyze and look very deeply at what I was putting into my body. And so that was definitely the catalyst towards a better diet. And to me at that time, that meant less processed food and eating clean and whole foods as much as possible. And then over the next few years, I began to research and watch documentaries of different kinds, including ones about veganism and plant-based food and what healthy diets are, and began to increase my plant intake, decrease my animal intake. But it wasn't until I would say I moved here to San Diego that I really started to dive into potentially becoming fully vegetarian, meaning I was still eating dairy and maybe eggs. And I think we had briefly touched on this as well, that when I moved to San Diego, I was super excited about the seafood scene because growing up in a landlocked state and then living in the Midwest for a time, you know, the fresh seafood was not really a thing. So I was very excited about that. And I did, you know, for a time when I moved here, consider myself to be labeled a pescatarian, where, you know, fish was really the only meat product that I was eating. And in January 1st of 2018, as my New Year's resolution, I just
tilt the mic up a little.
There as my New Year's resolution in 2018, I decided to go vegan because it was something I'd always wanted to do, but I found it difficult to overcome cheese, as many, many people do, and seafood and all these things. And I had kind of gone mostly vegetarian by that time, but I was like, okay, I'm going to go vegan. January 1st, see how long I can take this. And I've never looked back.
And, did you have a friend or a support system, or did you just do
no.
it? I think that's one of my biggest suggestions.
Absolutely.
If you're going to do this, like, have someone to do it with, it becomes a lot more fun. So kudos to you for kind of doing it all on your own.
I will say I didn't at the time have anyone in my circle that was vegan or encouraging me to go vegan. It was something decision I made on my own. I was lucky enough to have a partner at the time that was totally ready to jump in with me, which was incredibly helpful, but neither of us knew anything about it. And, you know, I was the cook in the family anyway, so it was up to me to, you know, figure all that out. Mm-hmm. But there's an incredible community here in San Diego. Like, we're very, wow. very lucky. The vegan community is immense. And so I did dive into that very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that was helpful. Very, very helpful. And I mean, by summer of 2018 was when I launched Santosha. So, I mean, I just within 6 months of going vegan, I just decided this is my life and I'm going to build my career out of it as well.
Isn't it incredible how quickly you realize all the positive changes that happen? And then you're like, hello, why would you not try this? Like, I'm guaranteeing you all these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And
like, give it a try.
It's, you know, I think, you know, we always, as plant-based eaters, I think we've all understand and come to the realization that there are three reasons that people go plant-based or vegan.
Say four, but
yeah. Okay, four.
Well, let's go in a little deeper here.
Yeah.
So I call them the four pillars. And yeah. I think, and I wanted to talk about this. And
great.
This is super important. So I would say disease prevention is the most conservative approach, where you're not ruffling any feathers with people's opinions. Right. It's like, there's a lot of diseases out there. So is disease prevention one of yours?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely usually keep it more high level, where I don't like dive into it, but I love that. I'm going to use that from now on. Cause yes, I mean, I would say health.
I think disease prevention is specific, where people are Michael Greger, Dean Ornish,
perfect.
Neil Barnard, Caldwell Esselstyn, and Colin Campbell are like some of the most brightest nutritionalists and plant-based researchers supplying websites, books, documentaries, and all this scientific data. And that's why my parents went plant-based for that specific reason. Like if your family, I don't know what your past and prior health has been. I know a lot of people are dealing with that are our age, their parents are getting older. And it's like, well, I want my parents to be healthy just like them. And, you know, it wasn't, we didn't have all this information 10 years ago,
right.
20 years ago. This is like kind of new stuff. And there's crazy documentaries with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Game Changers on Netflix that was incredible. And it's just kind of a food revolution is taking place. And so disease prevention, I think, is it's fact. And I need to get better at learning all of the science and data so I could be more factual instead of opinionated, talking to someone who's not like you, who's more of the carnivore stance. Anyways, let's move on to the second pillar. What do you think?
Well,
I mean, we're saying the same thing.
We are environment.
Environment's huge. I think a couple documentaries, I watched Food Choices that kind of got me going. That was the first documentary. And then Cowspiracy was really eye-opening and What the Health. And yeah, the environment and, you know, living in Leucadia, Encinitas, beautiful San Diego. We're so lucky to be by the ocean and everyone's so conscientious about the environment. Most places, it's not even a thought. And for you, it's like your life's work right now. So yeah, the environment's huge. Third pillar.
Animals,
yeah. For sure. And like everyone loves animals, it seems. And the whole meme that you see, it's like, well, you wouldn't eat your dog.
Right.
And, you know, for me, that's kind of like third, fourth in a priority. Maybe catering to other people's opinions and traditional views. Where like I grew up going to SeaWorld and the zoo, not knowing what was going on as a kid. Like you don't understand that. And then you understand it and you're like, oh man, that's like brutal. Like there's this huge orca whale stuck in a bathtub and it just can't move. And then you go surfing and you actually like see dolphins. Now I swam with dolphins at SeaWorld as a kid and got to touch them. That was pretty cool. I didn't really know or understand what was going on. And I don't think my parents had any bad intention. It was like, let's have this awesome experience. And it was. Looking back on it, if I had kids, I don't know if I'd even go to SeaWorld.
Right.
I think one thing that I've changed is in Del Mar, right where I work, there's a horse track with races. And if you go early, there's an awesome concert series and you pay $6 for an incredible concert as long as you catch the last couple of races. And I would usually go. And since kind of like having a change in heart, I can't support the races.
Right.
So I haven't gone to the races in the last couple of years. I watched Real Sports, which is a sports documentary on HBO led by Bryant Gumbel. And if like a horse gets injured, they're just like strung up and head chopped off. And it's like, it would be really cool to see horses roaming the prairies of California and more animals in the world instead of the other way, like almost extinction in a lot of different species. So animals. And then I think, you said overall health. I think like fitness, being a volleyball coach and being extremely active, I think like disease prevention and fitness are very different.
Yep.
As you get older, it's more disease prevention. Younger, it might be more fitness. And I was like seeing incredible recoveries, pushing myself in the gym or being sore. And whether I was in the gym, like during that workout, I would have a quicker recovery time, like breathing and my muscles were, and then day to day during COVID, during our 3 month lockdown, I ran 100 miles for 3 months straight and I biked 150 miles. So every day I was like running 5 miles and biking 15. And because we had nothing to do, I was eating so clean with my two roommates, Dom and Rock. Dom, Rock, I hope you guys are watching. Miss you guys. With my two mates, Dom and Rock, and we were all plant-based. We were all eating super healthy, like getting good sleep and stretching, eating, and I could not get sore. And I feel like as you train more and more and you eat more raw foods, I mean, it just all takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. It's wild. So yeah, I think the four pillars are totally like the foundation that we need to continue to educate people on. And my brother brought up a good point. He thinks that the term vegan is mostly associated with animals. And
yes,
it is. And I think it's because you could have Oreos and processed food and still be vegan. So you're not preventing diseases mm-hmm. and you're not gaining your fitness. And, you know, I'd say the environment, it's helpful for the environment as well.
Yeah, I was going to say for like me, the differentiation between the two terms has kind of come to a lifestyle, like a whole lifestyle versus absolutely. A diet, which is I definitely the terms are used interchangeably, plant-based versus vegan. And I do personally identify as a vegan because I consider that my entire lifestyle is, to the best of my ability, free of animal cruelty. And so, yes, I think it is absolutely associated with the animal rights activism part of.
And that's good. I think that's a good thing. I think
of course it's good.
I think it's great. Yeah. It's like, I feel like we're missing the boat. And, you know, I have some friends and I know some close people who go out there and like hunt and fish, and it's a lifestyle too. Yeah. It's not like going and buying cans of tuna fish or low quality meat at Vons, Ralph's, Trader Joe's, wherever it is. Like, they're going out there and they're hunting. So I kind of understand and appreciate a little bit of that lifestyle without like just writing that hobby or activity off.
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, when talking about animal activism in association with either plant-based or vegan lifestyle, like there's so many people that don't, which is okay because we're all learning and educating ourselves over time, but
hopefully
listening to podcasts like this.
Most of us are not.
I think, you know, something that I am trying to become more aware of and learn more about is understanding that, you know, so many cultures have traditions and necessity rooted in animal products. And in no way do I want what I'm doing with my career to take away from the legitimacy of that. Because what I'm talking about when I'm talking about my lifestyle and what I'm attempting to teach other people, like, it is the unnecessary cruelty of our current animal agriculture system. And then, you know, the healthiest we can be when it comes to fitness and disease prevention in association with animal products.
Yeah, we're just creating fast food advertisements and paying people to create a product, a burger, a taco that has more cheese and meat to it.
Yeah.
Did you know that someone actually gets hired to come out with a product, I think at Taco Bell or Wendy's or somewhere in the fast food world, to create a product that has more cheese on it?
I mean, I'm not surprised like, at all.
And the cheese is not real.
Right. So, well, and that's the other thing too.
And the term real, what is real? I mean, we're kind of real here in the sense of like, I could hear you and we'll be able to play this back.
Right.
And to me, this is as real as real is. You'll see all these advertisements. If you watch SportsCenter or ESPN, like the sports industry mm-hmm. is really like in cahoots with the fast food industry.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
And they use these terms real. None of that food is really good for you.
Right.
It's all real.
It's real.
Really
it's
bad.
Tangible. It's like,
it's all,
it exists.
Imagine if you put really bad for you.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. And it's killing us. And it's sad when it's affecting people who you know the most, who aren't able to change their view, put on a new lens and like, mm-hmm. oh, wow. Like,
yeah. And I think there's obviously a really big association, or hopefully over time that will change or is beginning to change already, with a plant-based diet, especially when it is labeled vegan, for that being not as accessible to every economic status. And I think you probably can speak to this. I know I can, because it doesn't have to be that way. It definitely, if you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, which I would associate with people like Colin Campbell and Esselstyn, and you know, if you really look into what they're teaching about and the science behind that, like those are not expensive diets, because we're buying, you know, I buy grains in bulk and I buy vegetables and all these things. And of course the and I will say that I myself, I do splurge from time. Like, I will go to Plant Power and get, like, some vegan fast food every once in a while.
Shout out to Jeffrey Harris. I'm coming up to his house in a couple weekends to do... He's the owner of Plant Power.
Oh, great.
To do a podcast with him. I love Plant Power.
I literally, after this, I'm like, am I going to get Plant Power after this? Because it's so close.
Do it.
But
do
yeah. So, I mean, like, these are... We live in an amazing time as plant-based eaters to have these incredible alternatives available to us, and alternatives that are no longer necessarily filled with dust and crap. Like, there are actual alternatives available to us that are made from whole foods, like nut cheeses and things like that,
tempeh,
right?
And like the tofu turkeys, the tempeh like turkey.
It's incredible.
You put some mustard on it and like all this other stuff and avocado.
It's incredible, but you can't, and those are going to be the more expensive options for people that are, you know,
the processed vegan,
the processed
food,
vegan,
the high
food.
Quality processed,
but
not the
eating
raw.
A plant-based diet does not have to be expensive. And I'm very much speaking from personal experience. I don't have the extra finances to spend on, you know, all this processed food. And it's better for me anyways to eat the whole food plant-based as much as possible. And that's something I like. That's why I do the cooking classes. And people are always, that's my favorite part, is when people are so surprised at the end of our class, like what we have created out of these, you know, vegetables and grains that I came to the class with. So that just brings me so much joy to show people what you can create.
Yeah, we're really fortunate living in North County, San Diego, and just kind of right outside my door on the street, there's a few great spots. A lot of people aren't as fortunate. And yep. I was talking to a good friend of mine, Maisha Cooper, and I'm looking forward to having Maisha on the show. And we were in PB the other day, and she's all about the plant-based vegan lifestyle. And she has a few kids, and she was just kind of bringing up good points. Like, there's food deserts.
Yes.
And that term, I didn't really understand, where people don't have access to
fresh,
high-quality
food,
anything. Like Trader Joe's or a Farmer's Stand or a Whole Foods or a Sprouts or a Vons. They kind of just have lower quality, you know, 99-cent store or whatever it is, that it's maybe a little more lower quality food. And it's a little harder to want to eat that fruit. For me, it's like, if I'm just going to eat fruit and vegetables, I'm going to get the best quality fruit and vegetables.
Right.
And I don't care what I spend, because for me, food's medicine, and it's preventing a hopefully further, you know, issue down the road that's probably going to cost a lot more money in the hospitals or with surgery or anything. So the issue with like food deserts, it's a really interesting topic, where if someone lives in a lower quality area or a more impoverished community and they don't have the accessibility to all these foods, then what?
Yeah, this is getting into the realm of food justice, and you know, food and social justice go hand in hand, as well as climate change and the effects of, you know, all of this go hand in hand with our various areas like food deserts and lower income areas. And for me, I think it comes down to, and this is, again, I'm not like super educated on this, so I'm not going to speak to it very much, but I think we all see a necessity for the people in positions like ourselves, where we do live in this incredible area full of resources, and maybe we are in a financial situation where we can buy the best quality food for our bodies. It's going to be up to us and the people that come from our standing to dive into, at the very least, policy changes that affect, you know, these different areas, because I'm probably personally not going to be able to make the greatest impact. I don't know how, and I'm not, but I can vote for the right people that are going to make these changes in these areas that need it the most.
You may surprise yourself if you go for it.
Yeah, well, I would say in ways we are going for it, right? Like, we'll get into sustainability
right
is sexy.
Yeah,
a little bit, and you know how that goes hand in hand. But yeah, I mean, it's, I'm going to take it back to like what I was speaking about before when it comes to composting or a plant-based diet or anything that we do in our life. When we want to make a change, the we can only do our best with the resources that we have available to us. So making for people that, you know, maybe live in a place where they don't have incredible vegan restaurants, which moving to San Diego has just made it so much easier to go vegan because I can, you know, walk down any street and find a great food. And there are a lot of cities and areas, even here in California, of course, that don't have that available to them. And so just continuing to educate yourself in any way possible. And then when something does become available to you, do it. And I think one of the biggest impacts that you can make in an area like a food desert is learning how to grow your own food or like finding the closest resource for locally grown food, I think is one of the biggest first steps.
Yeah. Keep educating, Liz. Yeah. You're doing it. Keep educating. Okay. I have a fun little game here to break up the monotony of just talking.
Sure.
All right. We're going to, for the listeners who are like, well, what's healthy? What should I eat? And I'm like, doesn't matter where you are, eat this. Let's go back and forth. We're going to popcorn.
Okay.
So you go and then I go. You're going to popcorn one thing that you think. And let's go like kind of rapid fire, maybe try to get to 20 okay. food items, obscure or normal, that you think people should be consuming that you're like, oh, this was amazing. Like all these benefits that I read about and like you stand for. I'll let you go first.
Cool. Kelp.
Kelp. That's funny because I like never have kelp.
Okay.
So I'm going to compost and have kelp more.
Great.
Turmeric. The raw root.
Favorite.
I chop it up and put it in oatmeal with like fruit, nuts, cinnamon, seeds. Amazing.
Yeah. Beautiful. Mung bean.
Mung beans. Yeah. Like it. Fun name.
Yeah.
Avocados.
I mean, kale.
Was going to be my next move.
Yeah.
Kale is amazing for us. Mm-hmm. And I'll just go right after that, berries. Just all berries.
That was my next one. Perfect.
Yeah. Kale and berries are staples.
Quinoa.
I'll say purple and sweet potatoes.
I'm going to say rice.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not really going into. Okay. I know, but I think that rice gets a really bad rap and I don't like that.
I mean, I think it's a little harder to cook.
Okay.
Unless you have a rice cooker.
I could see that. But nutritionally,
I think you have it out. So it's like, why would I have...
Yeah.
Like if I have Thai or Indian or Chinese, like it comes with rice.
Yeah. And maybe it's just like because it's like it's a staple for me. Like,
I mean, there's brown rice, wild rice. Yep. Try different rices. So that's if you're just having boring old like white rice. I'll say all beans and lentils.
Yep.
You know, Michael Greger, who I've mentioned once before, has a website called nutritionfacts.org, which is super helpful for it's like Wikipedia for food. And he says beans are so good for you that you should eat them 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. And I think talking about stigma is like farting.
Yeah.
And beans like have a lot of fiber. So that's why you fart. And I've heard, I forget the woman, like farting's good. It's a sign of your digestion tract working really well. And if you're eating too many beans or you're eating too much food, you're going to be farting more. So maybe don't eat so much.
There are ways to cook things that lessen the actual enzyme that's causing that as well. So people that are worried about that, there are techniques to lowering the possibility that that's going to cause digestive problems.
Eat slower and chew your food more. And I think soaking, that'll really...
Soaking. Yes, like soaking beans, grains, anything to begin the breakdown process of those different enzymes. And I also want to say, I'm going to jump in here really quick because we are going back and forth on all these foods, that not... So, for example, I eat pretty much a whole food plant-based diet again with like some treats here and there of the amazing vegan food that we have. And I have a really sensitive digestive system and not everyone can eat everything. And I want people to understand that we understand that. Yeah. And for example, like I can't do lentils, like which sounds crazy, but like I don't do lentils or beans. That's just why I mentioned split mung beans because they already have this kind of, they're softened. They have, that's what I can eat and they have amazing nutrients and protein. Mm. And there are so many vegetables that I can't eat for various health reasons. And so that's something that I really pride myself on helping people through and helping people with, just like literally DMing me on Instagram for like some insight or, you know, just bouncing ideas off of, because for the last 10 years of my life, I've struggled off and on with various food intolerances for different reasons, like whether it's digestive related or other health issues. And so it's been my journey so far to figure out how to create nutrient dense and delicious food, even in the face of dietary restrictions.
The good thing is there's so many foods out there in the fruits, vegetables,
say the plant world. Like, we have a lot more to play with.
There's a lot of options out there. So I'm sure there's a ton of foods that I haven't tried and that you haven't tried that Absolutely. You're still exploring. So if you are kind of having these dietary restrictions, just know, like, keep exploring. Yeah. I guarantee you, if you go to a market, there's going to be so many things you'll be like, oh, I've never had that. Like, I don't know how to cook it, so I'm not going to get it. Like, get it, Google
DM
it.
DM Liz.
DM Liz. Yeah, just DM Santosha Nutrition. Okay, let's go a couple more.
All right. I'm going to say... I'm going to say seeds. I'm going to go
read my mind.
Okay. Yeah, broad seeds.
Seeds are good. Yeah. Pumpkin, flax, chia,
flax,
hemp.
Chia, all of them. Sunflower.
Okay. Let's go beets. My dad absolutely does not like beets, to put it kindly. And I see him, like, if they're at the Whole Foods salad bar or somewhere, like, I will totally throw on beets.
Oh, yeah. Love them. You can even bake them into a chocolate cake.
They're really beet chips if you have a dehydrator.
Yeah. For some of my clients, I've hid them in like a brownie or like a chocolate cake or something. I'm going to say, I mean, I said kelp, but I'm actually going to expand that and just say sea vegetables because they contain so many nutrients that we need, especially on a plant-based diet. And you can get them in granule form and just sprinkle them on your food, and it's not really going to change the flavor much. Wow. And it's going to give you those micronutrients.
That's like a ultimate life hack. That's a plant-based production life hack. I was just thinking of, kind of going off that. I'm not going to use this one, but cinnamon on oats is like a must. So cinnamon is good. I think just more greens, arugula and spinach.
Yeah.
Like, greens, beans, and berries are like absolutely staples for me. So I'm going to go arugula and spinach.
Nice.
Dark leafy greens.
Dark leafy greens, yes. I'm going to say, okay, again, I know we're popcorning, but it just makes me keep thinking of things. It's funny to me, like, you practice mostly raw vegan, or like, to the best of your ability.
Yeah, I was pretty hardcore. Yeah,
raw.
Yeah.
It's funny because I hardly eat any raw food because my digestive system can't handle it. So I have to cook everything. I have to cook all vegetables. Like, I'll play with it a little bit and try it because I love raw food. I love it, but it doesn't love my intestines.
I would love for you to share. if you want. Yeah. What is that like? Like, the feeling of
when I eat raw food?
Yeah.
So I find that a lot of it doesn't get broken down. So I'll actually see it, like, in the toilet. Like, and that's very frustrating because that means that my body is not breaking it down, nor is it getting any nutrients from it if it can't. And there are a lot of things, especially people that are familiar with, like, Ayurvedic medicine and practices, they don't, like, it's, they it really encourage cooked food.
Sure.
Because the body, it's, cooking in the right way and applying heat to food is the first step to the digestion process.
Okay.
And that means that our body will be able to absorb more nutrients if it has begun the breakdown process prior to it entering our digestive system, which starts in our mouth. And like I said, every body is different, so it requires different nutrients and ways of receiving that nutrient. So a raw vegan diet does work for a lot of people, and it's but I do want to make sure people know it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, and cooking things lightly, you know, without like applying super high temperature with a ton of oil, because that could get a little harmful.
Exactly.
So just light cooking and kind of less is more there with cooking. All right, I'm going to go last one here.
Okay.
Mushrooms.
Oh, yes.
Mushrooms.
Thank you.
Are, you know, someone's like, well, I love tacos and we do taco night. Like, chop up mushrooms, season them. Put some beans, guacamole, and salsa, and now you have ground meat made out of mushrooms. Yeah,
you mentioned two of my favorites that I didn't even think of, turmeric and mushrooms, and our healing broths. One is an immune booster that's a turmeric and ginger-based broth, and the other is a mushroom detox that is a mushroom-based broth. Because I find just the healing elements in those foods are so incredible for the body.
Yeah, they absolutely are.
So that's really funny that you mentioned both of those. And mushrooms, God, so versatile. Like the amount of different types of mushrooms and then the ways that you can cook them. Just in the cookbook, we have a mushroom like scallop recipe.
Mm, I think I saw that on your Instagram. That looked
probably
really good.
Yeah, which, and you know, I'll serve it to people and they just don't understand like how that's possible. But mushrooms are so incredible.
Yeah, I would love to open up a club, bar, lounge that's like high-end plant-based food in Encinitas, Leucadia. And I think you could be the head chef.
Done. Yeah. Let's do it.
Like, you know, a little sports bar, like kind of hangout lounge.
Yeah, yeah.
That like could be like a little night disco cool vibe. And then like really so high-end plant-based food and maybe some high-end like liquor.
Yeah. I think that's...
That doesn't exist.
It doesn't. And, you know, it's...
There's all the hippie places that are just like kind of lunch, not dinner vibe.
There's nothing night, like late night.
No.
Yeah, I agree. Like there's nowhere for us to go. No bars that have food that we can eat. You know, Kindred, I would say, in downtown San Diego is probably the one that comes to mind that has incredible cocktails and, you know, late night food.
Yeah.
If you haven't been to Bar Kindred, like one of the number one vegan restaurants in San Diego, I'd say.
Okay.
By far, but I would love to, but I can hardly eat anything there, to be frank, just because I have additional like food restrictions.
Great drinks though.
Great drinks. But it's, you know, and I actually don't do alcohol anymore either. And so like going out late night is just not like, I need somewhere that has, you know, really great options. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea. It definitely is needed and would be such a great place like here in Northern, North County. Heck yeah.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, killer.
So if anyone's watching or listening and you want to be a angel investor or something, partner, let's make it happen. Okay, let's kind of carry forward a little bit into your other endeavor.
Yeah.
Just quick pause here. Again, you are listening to Into the Blue Zone. This is a plant-based production. You could find us on Instagram at a plant-based production, and I'm going to upload this Instagram live video to YouTube, and the channel is a plant-based production. And just like Liz, if you have any nutrition questions or comments, feel free to email me at aplantbasedproduction.com aplantbasedproduction@gmail.com. And also working on a website with a friend that's going to be launched here in a short near future. And that's going to be exciting. So you're listening to a plant-based production Into the Blue Zone with Skylar Heyman and featured guest Liz Murphy. So back to you, Liz. What is the other endeavor, SIS?
Yes.
And
so SIS is Sustainability is Sexy, because it is. So it's an organization, it's a nonprofit organization that we started just this year in 2021. So it's a baby. And it's basically, okay, I'm going to start at the beginning. So in 2019, a friend of mine and myself attended a food waste summit put on by the city of Encinitas. It had an incredible panel of speakers from the Solana Center, EDCO, Green Oceanside, just a multitude of information about food waste from the state level to the city level, and it was incredible. Now, it was small, which is fine, but we noticed that the demographic in attendance was mostly above retirement age, and we were pretty much by far the youngest attendees. And that was discouraging because we were two small business owners, both vegan food business owners, that were also passionate about sustainability and veganism and plant-based eating, our number one, our environment and sustainability, and seeing that the demographic, our demographic that we wanted to reach with our businesses, was not there attending and learning about this really important information. And so we went to the drawing board to figure out how do we make sustainability sexy and reach the demographic that we think is going to have the biggest impact on the future, which is going to be the younger generations. And the initial idea was for a festival. So to have a very classic San Diego style festival with food and music and drinks and probably on the beach or somewhere close and just very classic, but also completely as much as possible zero waste, with also education, like vendors and different people on site to provide resources to this very fast-paced, career-driven, young professional demographic that may not have the time or the energy to put into figuring out what is a sustainable lifestyle and what do I need to do to have less of an impact on climate change. And, you know, we were very excited about it and we had it planned for spring of 2020. So when the pandemic hit and we had, of course, to cancel that or postpone, I should say, went back to the drawing board, got together with a group of incredible female small business owners in my community that are friends of mine. And we collaborated on the idea to create this brand that was just sitting there that was ready for the festival and turn it into something even more impactful and bigger. And that's where the nonprofit was born. So we had this idea to create an organization that is a hub of connection for businesses and individuals in San Diego to provide them with education and resources about a sustainable lifestyle. And when that comes to a business, that's much more than just right your personal lifestyle. There's so much impact that businesses and changes they can make. And so we wanted to be that hub of connection because we found that it didn't really exist for sustainable businesses or businesses that wanted to become more sustainable. And sustainable is a big word. It's a very broad word. You know, I had a conversation with my team recently. What is sustainability? Because I think it means different things to different people, as well as, of course, the to me, the original definition is just exactly that, something that is sustainable, that will last, something that moves mm-hmm. forward. And then, of course, the definition has now turned into eco-friendly. They're kind of interchangeable, sustainable and eco-friendly. But at the end of the day, the reason we're doing what we're doing is to create, using that eco-friendly definition, that environmentally friendly definition, that's going to last, that's actually going to be sustainable. And so as an organization, you know, like I said, we just recently started. We want to figure out ways to make sustainability sexy. And we are currently doing that through a weekly or sort of weekly podcast that comes out that highlights local San Diego businesses that are doing incredible things and providing amazing resources to the community, both large and small, that people may not know about. So we want to highlight them and get that information out to the community. We are hosting events at least quarterly, if not more often, that are large scale events, both in North and South County, to bring people and the community together and put vendors in front of them and food and beverages that are doing it right. And we are creating a blueprint for events because here in Southern California, especially, and everywhere, of course, but events are so massive here in Southern California. And the waste generated at them is just exponential in many, many different ways. So we're trying to create that blueprint to provide a service. We're hoping to have it up and running by next year that we can provide both service-based and just informational to large and small events. This is how you put on a what you can call a zero waste event, meaning organic waste collection on site, working with, you know, little to no plastic waste of any kind, you know, plant-based food to the best of your ability, since that is the lowest environmental impact food available, just all these different things. So yeah, it's, there's a lot going on, but at the end of the day, it's us making sustainability as sexy and providing resources to the community about, you know, regenerative and sustainable practice.
Do you like cringe? I could see you just cringing if you see like a festival or just like, oh man, like I can make this so much more better. And
yeah, I mean, yes and no, because I come from a background of events and putting on events. And so I understand like how daunting it is to try and think about how to lower waste streams when you're just trying to like put on this incredible, spectacular event. And, you know, I just recently attended Ohana Festival in Orange County. And I would, at least they're by far the most sustainable festival I've ever attended in person, deliberately so. They are doing their best to, and so they had, you know, different bins for compost and landfill and recycle and like had really large scale sustainable sponsors like Bank of the West, which is the only bank that does not support, does not invest in fossil fuels. And they are available here in San Diego for anyone. Like, that's a whole nother issue, is like, you know, making sure you're consciously and environmentally investing and like all these things. But I was very impressed by the Ohana Festival, but it was such a great experience to be there and experience it, because I actually spent, you know, the person I went with luckily supported me in this, but I would like stand by the waste collection areas just to watch people and see where they were actually putting their trash. Because unfortunately, there wasn't.
Oh, you put it in the wrong.
Yeah, there wasn't bin. A lot. There were these bins, but there wasn't signage explaining. You know, which I understand. It's
just
baby
get it
steps.
In a bin is what the event setter upper is thinking.
Yes, and that's okay. But I mean, with a festival that has, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100,000 people coming through over a weekend, I'm guessing they're not sorting afterwards. That would be an incredible endeavor, and if they are, kudos to you, but I would guess that they're not. And so, you know, standing there watching people did, because there were different bins, took the second to try to figure out.
Yeah,
but you know, I saw food going in the landfill, and I saw plastic going in the compost, and I saw all these things. And so it was incredible to see the first steps made, because again, that is much more than 98 to 99% of the events going on out there. Mm-hmm. So that's the first step, but we have to take it so much further. And being a part of an organization that one of our major, major goals is to provide this blueprint and this resource for festivals like the Ohana Fest, like it actually, as much as I cringed, it also made me very excited, because to know that there are large scale organizations and festivals that are already thinking about it is incredible. But then knowing that we're going to be able to provide them with even more is exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in the Southern California region, we're so far ahead.
Yes.
On, you know, zero waste, sustainable thoughts and plant-based eating that we need to like now get out of our bubble and like travel.
Yes.
And bring the passion and word elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because,
absolutely.
You know, if we just stay here and keep talking about it here or putting on events here, the other places are going to, like the Southeast, the Northeast, the Midwest, they're going to keep doing the same stuff. So,
yeah. And one thing we thought about when we started the organization as well is like, yes, we are starting here in Southern California, which is an incredible place to start this because we have the resources and the knowledge to kind of kickstart it in a really nice way. But one of our biggest goals is to see, you know, whether it's 1, 5, 10 years from now, to see SIS chapters in every city, in every major city in the United States. So if you're listening and you live in a city where you feel like, you know, there's not a lot of movement around, you know, climate change and sustainability, and you're interested in learning how to do that, please, please reach out to us, because that's the major goal, is to create these chapters everywhere so that every city has these blueprints available to them.
Okay, so for the listeners, if you have any questions on sustainability, you got to DM Liz at Sustainability is Sexy.
Yeah.
And if you have any questions on dietary restrictions or anything plant-based, you can email myself or Instagram me at A Plant-Based Production. Or if you feel more comfortable and want to go to Liz, Santosha Nutrition. So
yeah, absolutely.
Both of us have like wearing a couple different hats here. And, you know, it's like the personal, you made a comment like, why would you do the podcast on your personal Instagram if it's a plant-based production? I was like, I don't know. It's a great question. So this is the first live podcast on the plant-based production page. To me, it all just needs to go to the same spot and get a website with all this amazing information that you probably already have on your website, and just keep building it, that so people could, you know, find it at ease. And then hopefully we could continue to educate and just kind of make that decision to compost, you know, read for a second where you're throwing something away. I go to Whole Foods and it's like, there's a green bin, there's a blue bin, you know, we're all color associated right. with green and blue. And then there's like a brown kind of like just for the box. It's confusing.
It's confusing.
It's confusing.
And
like,
it's
like,
not
that's
streamlined.
A whole nother,
like
it's not as simple as like, okay, fast food's not good for you. And like, this is good for you.
Yeah.
Like raw foods are good for you.
And that's the
it's
thing
like,
is like,
you're
it's
going to throw something away and I just want to leave.
For large scale change, like I have to remind myself, and I'm sure you run into the same thing. Like it can be incredibly overwhelming looking at the world as a whole and, you know, the direction that we have been headed and are currently headed in different facets. And it can be overwhelming, discouraging, all these things. And I would consider myself an extremely optimistic person overall. But I have to take a step back every once in a while and remember that the work that I'm doing person to person and within my own community is making an impact. You know, I don't know whose mind I'm going to change, and that person may be the one to, you know, make large scale, or maybe it'll be me someday. But it can get discouraging and it can be overwhelming, especially for me in it. And then I, you know, would imagine for somebody who is interested but doesn't know where to start. And that's truly why we're doing what we're doing at Sustainability is Sexy, is for anyone at any level, introductory or experienced, we want to be a resource for you. And so, yeah, I would just highly encourage people to, like, if it's something that you feel called to do, whether it's to be involved as a volunteer or on the team or something like that, check it out. Or if you just want to learn more, just give the podcast a listen or give us a follow to start super simply. And then over time, you may find yourself, you know, encouraged or compelled to be more involved.
In just 2 days, to kind of piggyback the event that you brought up and kind of San Diego, I'm putting on my own event, and I'm very excited to launch a Plant-Based Productions first community-based event called First and Finals. And it's going to be as little zero waste as possible because of your impact on me. So instead of buying a printer and chasing down ink and paper time and time again over the future, I'm just going to print out a couple sheets. It's going to be a walk or run group. And then I'm going to teach a short little plant-based class, the education piece that we always need. And then my friend Marcelo Geddes is going to lead a meditation. And it's at this beautiful house called Ananda Encinitas, the Temple of Joy. And our hosts are Casey Hughes and Anka Bandersky. And they are just so beautiful. And their house is amazing. He's done such incredible work. The place sells itself along with the walk to the beach at Beacons Beach and Grandview. So if you're listening and you're like, wow, I have some time in the morning in just 2 days on October 29th, you can park for free outside of Casey's house called the Temple of Joy. And it's going to be a free event. So just show up from 8 to 10 a.m. His address is 946 Hermes Avenue in Leucadia, Encinitas, San Diego. So just wanted to put that out there for everyone watching and listening. And I'm really excited to grow a plant-based production and figure out what's next. And it's such a fun game that you are playing that I'm now playing. And it's like, okay, how could we make what we're doing a little better each day? And if you step back and look at the big picture, you can view it as overwhelming and you could view it as a challenge that, okay, like one step at a time, no matter who I'm with, no matter what I'm doing, if you're trying to get sober or if you're trying to make $1 million or whatever it is you're trying to do, it's just one step at a time. And if you get up early, I'm learning, my friend Lauren Nutter, she gets up super early and has rubbed off on me the last month or two. And I've been getting up like before 7 o'clock, which is early for me. I'm not like that. So it's like amazing how much more productive you are in the morning, because when you're staying up from 8:30 to 10:30 or 11, you're just kind of hanging out unless you're doing work. I can't do work at night. I feel like most people are just hanging out at night watching TV or something. So if you're doing work at night, that's impressive. Maybe you're just sleeping the day away.
I think getting up early
has been very helpful for me.
I think for most of the population, I think, absolutely. And I actually fall into that category of preference is to go to bed a little bit earlier, although I do find myself working any hour of the day that I can fit it in, which has been a massive challenge for me, learning the balance of, you know, professional productivity and personal mental health. And so I'm getting better with that over time. But I prefer to go to bed early and get up, you know, seven or a little bit beforehand. I love the morning. I find it to be my most productive time for sure. But I also know people in my life that they are more turned on at night. You know, I think it depends on your brain and your rhythm, your circadian rhythm. And, but yeah, for majority of humans, I think learning that practice of getting up earlier can be incredibly beneficial for your productivity.
Yeah. So I just want to kind of go back to Lauren for a second. She was saying she wants to go plant-based, and we were chatting before the show. What suggestions do you have for either women or men on I love fish, and I can't get, like, I had another friend, and she was like, man, I just love fish. Like, I can't give it up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you could chop up watermelon. It looks like raw fish to me after, you know, such and such years being plant-based. I don't miss fish. I never really liked fish. I liked tartar sauce.
Okay.
So I liked fried flounder and tartar sauce as a kid. Or the fish au filet sandwich at Plant Power.
It's pretty bomb. That's easy to...
But yeah, that's like a quick... But I don't really... I never was into fish. So how do we like get that fish... Like, I just need fish.
Well, I think, first of all, thinking about, it sounds like maybe at least one of these people has already been compelled to start a plant-based diet, right? So there's some sort of reasoning happening already. Mm-hmm. And so figuring out what that is the first step. Because I fall into the category of people that I did love fish. I loved eating it. It was for sure like my main sort. Like I would have a piece of mahi-mahi every day for lunch. That was my like bulky, you know, like protein for the day. And I loved sushi and all these things. I loved fish. And because I started to educate myself and become so passionate about the environment and sustainability, it was like an overnight, I'm never eating fish again. Once I began to educate myself on the impacts of, you know, the fishing industry. And then I am just blown away with how having the information at our fingertips of the amount of microplastics that are going into your body when you eat seafood. Any food, really, unfortunately, because it's in our water system, but like seafood, think about the amount of plastic that's in the ocean and the fish, you know, eating the microplastics in the water and then you eating the fish. That's, you know, I think there's some sort of statistic of like, I don't know what it is for sure, but something along the lines of like every year, like people that consume seafood are eating like the equivalent of like one credit card or something like that. Like there is some statistic. So I would encourage people to look that up if you want a little bit of a shock factor. But thinking about that kind of stuff for me was night and day, one day to another. I was just like, okay, no thank you.
Like, yeah, you have a little bit of that willpower and extreme discipline. So where look, you just...
if the environment is something that you're passionate about, watching something like Seaspiracy or like these, you know, available podcast documentaries, research that people are doing on the impacts of the fishing industry on the environment, that's going to be massive to helping to shift your mind away from the necessity of eating seafood. If it is something that's more about the flavor and the taste that you just love and you don't want to give that up, there are alternatives. I really encourage people to go to places like Wrench and Rodent Sea Bastro Pub in Oceanside. It's not a fully vegan restaurant, but they offer some incredible plant-based sushi and sashimi options that are just mind-blowing. So if sushi is your thing, like check out some of the places that are doing these incredible alternatives that might, you know, satisfy that craving. And I know that there are products too, you know, especially for like the fried fish stuff and shrimp and like things like that, that are being made with different sea vegetables and stuff that aren't like too processed, that can make replacements that may, you know, help you transition. But at the end of the day, making that decision, whether it's for animal rights, you know, if you have that passion and that's one of your reasons for going plant-based, think about, you know, I think that a lot of people forget about fish, you know, as an animal. And
the sea, you know, you can't see underwater even when you're on top of it.
Right.
Even when you're surfing, you're like, the shark could, I won't see it till it bites me. You can't see the fish that you can't, they don't show the plastic. So all the plastic you're talking about, no one sees it.
Yeah,
they 100% talk about it. No one sees it, probably because it's really a tremendous amount that it would be mind blowing.
Yeah,
and all the football long, you know, fishing nets that are just mass fishing. You don't. That's not really like visual, and
it's hard.
And then you put it with Finding Nemo, and you make these fish into this kind of movie character, and it's just.
Yeah.
You know, there's aquariums and it's just kind of our own.
And that's why something like Seaspiracy is like, it's just like any other impactful kind of shock driven documentary. Like it's there for you if you want it, but it's also very easy to ignore because you can watch it. I loved it.
It was great with the environment. It's very eye opening when someone tells you that the sea plants impact more than the rainforest and like the plants above water. So the algae and all that is more impactful to our environment. And that is quickly dissipating because of the animals and, you know, the whole
biodiversity.
Yeah. Just the food cycle.
Yeah.
And it's like, he said something like within our lifetime, there's not going to be anything alive underwater.
Yeah. If we don't.
And I think it's within
make some changes.
A few decades.
Yeah, that's happening on above, you know, in the ocean and above. And there's, and the information is out there, and I'm grateful that it's on, you know, platforms like Netflix and things like that that the majority of humanity these days has access to. But for people that are finding it difficult to get past seafood, I would start there. And if that doesn't really change your mind, you know, then it's going to have to be a self shift.
I don't want to jump in here. And if it, yeah, if that doesn't change your mind, you got to change your lens. And that's what it all started with for me. And it was like self-improvement books, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Tool of Titans, you know, a book called How to Make Friends and Influence People. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to just be a better person.
Yeah. And
before
I think
figuring out what to eat and what not to eat.
Also, just reiterating something that I talk about both with SIS and Santosha is, especially, and I'm sure you're the same way, like, I was a meat eater. I grew up eating meat. So, like, whether it's about environmentalism and sustainability or plant-based food, I understand that we're all on our own timeline and our own journey. And the only way that you're going to be able to make sustainable, meaning long-lasting, improvements in your own life and changes is on your own time. And so never to be, don't feel discouraged or, you know, don't beat yourself up, because that's so much more detrimental to the process. And understanding that, like, just asking the questions is the first step. So having a conversation with, you know, with Skylar and saying, I don't know how to give up fish. Like, I don't think I could ever give up fish. That means you've already thought about giving up fish. Mm. And many people have not. Mm-hmm. So that's incredible.
I think about a lot of things and don't do them. So I think taking action then. It's like, think about it and then take action and go for it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's food related or asking someone out or anything. Like, just go for it. And that's kind of what the essence of this last 4 or 5 months with a plant-based production is. Just go for it. It's like, we're preaching good things, my friend said. Like, all this is good things. People want to support good things. You know, we're not in the firearms industry or, you know, doing something bad.
Yeah.
This is all good things. And it's kind of like the ultimate win-win.
Yeah.
And in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, it was a book on tape my friend Wiley Naylor shared with me. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it and it was like creating win-wins. Like, it's the ultimate win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you feel better. You're going to probably look better. You're going to hopefully be alive longer. If you don't love life, then you're throwing all this out the window.
Right.
What I'm about to say is just not important at all. You have to enjoy life to want to do this, for starters. If you don't enjoy life, it's like, well, why would I care? So if you enjoy life, it's like you're looking and feeling better. Your energy is way higher. And then, you know, the environment and the animals, it's just an ultimate win-win. So I am baffled. It's like, I wish I knew earlier.
Yeah.
And I wish more people, I almost wish I wasn't so passionate about it, so people weren't afraid to like try it when I'm talking about it. I feel like I give this, I reflect this kind of like pushy aura from myself to other people. And it's like, oh, you're
trying
to push
it onto me. I think there's a difference
between
excitement and pushiness. And I think, at least from what I've seen thus far, although I am already in your court, so I probably am not experiencing the full brunt of it. But, you know, what I've seen thus far, it's more of clear excitement and passion versus, you know, a push. And, you know, it's a word you used earlier, I think before we started recording, but like diplomatic, like not everyone's approach. I would say that's probably my approach when it comes to like sustainability and plant-based food. But at the same time, I've had a realization over the last few years, like we don't have time for diplomacy anymore. Like, so
you kind of contradicted yourself.
I did.
Like, everyone's on their own journey.
Well, they are though, because
press play. Like, because if you keep skipping over that Seaspiracy documentary, at some point you're going to be like,
I do agree with that, but I also, and I'm sure you've experienced it too, is just like one of the easiest ways to turn somebody off to what you're preaching is to like be in their face. And,
totally.
You know, and that's, you know, I've taken a step back from that kind of activism because I'm finding such an impact and such a success in just being an example and providing that education versus telling somebody that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And every person is going to approach their passion differently. But I'm finding that it also brings me more joy to do it that way, because there's a lot less conflict. I think there's a balance between challenge and conflict, and a challenge is good and productive. And I'd like to walk that line, but always kind of steer towards optimism and working with others, which I know you do too, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, because living that example, which you're doing, and by doing this podcast, and what we're trying to do by doing our podcast, is just providing the information, and people will come, and they are, yeah. and yeah, it's incredible yeah. to see.
Yeah, totally. I've become more sensitive and understanding. And at the same time, like, people, a lot of times people don't have anyone around, mm-hmm. let alone someone pushing them.
Right.
So when someone's just around, they're like, wow, you care. And then, like, they probably need to be pushed. And a lot, yeah. like, I need to be motivated and pushed. Like, we all need to be, like, kind of nudged off that ledge, whether it's for a fear of failure or just a lack of confidence in anything. Like, kind of feel out who you can nudge. Yeah. I think that's important. Like, yeah, understanding, okay.
That's exactly right.
Who am I working with, and what's my relationship, and what's the dynamic? And then, like, okay, I could be, like, a little more... you know, give them space, mm-hmm. pump the brakes, and just go out to eat at a vegan restaurant and don't even say anything about,
right,
man, you're gonna, or I could tell them, like, dude, you should be plant-based the next day. Like, you did yeah. it. Like,
but yeah, it's like,
you're not going to wilt away.
Challenging conversations are, like I said, incredibly yeah. productive and really, really important. And I think there's a lot of association with people in this industry that are focused on sustainability and veganism that can be associated with judgment. And I'm really happy to say that I've put myself in the court of, I'm not judging anyone for where they're at, you know? And I'm here, and so are you. Like, it's what you keep saying over and over, like, please, please just reach out
yeah.
to us as a resource. Cause that's, like, so fun to what we're here for.
tell people, like, the benefits and the mm-hmm. positive outcomes.
Yeah. And make them yummy food. I really think that's, like, one of the best ways to showcase.
It's so good, the food.
How easy this can be mm-hmm. is by showing them how delicious it can be, because there's such a stigma.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, vegan, plant-based is more expensive. The protein myth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I going to eat? Just dirt.
Right.
You know, it's like, or I don't, you know, it's so much easier because you don't, for me, a simple guy who's, you know, single on his own, no family, you know, I could just slice open an avocado or eat berries, and, like, mm-hmm. dishes are easier to clean and pans are easier to clean. It's just, there's so many little ripple effects that make it more desirable to keep living simply. So yeah. I could kind of do more outside of just washing dishes and cooking, and or just eating chicken breasts over and over again. And,
yeah.
Fun fact, marinate your tofu.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until I listened to a podcast. So marinate your tofu. It's basically like chicken.
Makes so much It'll difference.
It'll take
yeah.
on all the taste that chicken does. So
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And again, like, recipe wise, like, I would, like, highly, like, reach out to Skylar, plant-based production, and, like, talk the nutrition and, like, get that foundation started. And then when you're looking for how do I actually, like, live a delicious lifestyle, please just
pass you
come
right
on
along.
Over to the Instagram and check yeah. out what we got going on, because it's yeah. you know, there's amazing, simple, and delicious recipes that you can do.
Yeah. And then after that, go to Google.
Yeah, right.
It's like, there's a lot of recipes out there. I don't use recipes at all. My creative yeah. juices are flowing all the time, and mm-hmm. I just kind of look, and I was kind of fortunate where my aunt and mom were family good chefs, so it's pretty easy for me. Where other people are, like, totally yeah. lost in the kitchen, I'm like,
I know, I don't understand that either.
How are you
lost? Like, being a chef, I just yeah. like, that's my life, and food yeah. is my life, and it's been my passion for as long as I can remember. So when I come across somebody that is no idea, like, in the yeah. kitchen, just completely helpless, I'm just like, oh, like,
it's kind of like me with technology
mm.
and I'm learning. I could mm-hmm. learn it. So
yeah.
that person
can learn anything.
I could learn it. You know, you got to have that growth mindset. So maybe towards the end of all this talk that we're doing, like, you got to be open-minded to change if you, and that goes for me too, like, you know, composting and mm-hmm. things that I'm not eating, kelp noodles, you know, things that I can do and incorporate. And Colin Campbell, I like this kind of, I'm going to paraphrase what he said. The most important thing when you're eating a plant-based diet is to eat as much diversity as possible. Yes. So if you're just eating a banana every morning, like, you're missing out on all these other nutrients and mm-hmm. phytochemicals and nitrates and all these scientific jargon, plant-based words I'm using. Eat as much diverse food as possible and then eat often. It's like, who doesn't want to eat all the time, like, good food?
Yeah. And diversity is key.
And Liz could come over, or you could do a cooking class. What we should do is a plant-based production should host a Santosha nutrition cooking class.
Oh, heck yeah. That'd be so fun.
With an art gallery, like mm-hmm. a paint.
Yeah, I love putting all those like different painting. Creativity together.
So you could do like a cooking and people could come over and paint. And mm-hmm. my friend Lauren, hopefully we'll get Lauren to host. She has a cool studio.
Cool. So I would love it.
I'll go over there. Okay, so let's kind of wrap up here in the next couple minutes. So I usually ask people a plant-based challenge.
Okay.
Where I can't really ask you that because you're full-on plant-based, which is amazing. It's like kind of, can you eat one plant-based meal a week?
Right.
And you're doing maybe one vegan meal a week and everything else is plant-based. So we're just going to kind of skip ahead to the next key to life. What do you got for a key to life? Because I think after this hour, hour and a half, towards the end of the podcast, that's what people, if they finish the episode, may remember the most.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep it really simple. It's going to sound incredibly cliche, but cliches are cliche for a reason. Mm-hmm. When you realize or find something that brings you joy, which I think in the current fast-paced world and a lot of negative world that we live in, that can actually be kind of difficult for a lot of people. When you find that, hold on to it and explore it and grow it. Because one of the biggest things for me that I found, you know, when I found my passion for food and for sustainability and combined that into my career, doing what I love every single day, it's going to bring tears to my eyes right now, because it just, I could have stayed on my corporate path. I could have stayed in my corporate job, and I was what I would consider to be happy, but that happy versus this happy is
one wasn't happiness,
right? Which I didn't know,
one was,
you know,
on the yeah. optics on the outside.
Yeah. And
you
could
afford this and
yeah.
do whatever
and I
you
just,
want.
The joy that comes from living my what I love is just everything, because we're not on this planet for very long. So being able to live my joy, and I am lucky enough that my joy also makes a positive impact, or I hope it makes a positive impact on my community and on the world, it just means everything.
Cool. Well, keep doing it. I would say life goes by, yes, quicker as you get older. You kind of like, ooh, think about like where you want to be in 5 years, and you're like, all right, well, I can't be there. I want to be here. And I want people to live longer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, man, I'm blessed. I'm lucky. I feel like I could live to 100.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we could get our life expectancy well over 100 and be healthy if we're doing little exercises daily, stretching, working on our breathing, and eating plant-based. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I think just balancing that kind of breathing, active, and food, and going from there with, you know, little exercises, some short focused breathing practices, and then as raw plant-based foods as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to live, whether we're alive or not, I think, you know, people are going to be living a lot longer.
Yeah.
And healthily, like going up and down stairs, you know, going driving to the grocery store, and
yeah.
just everyday living, as opposed to being sick at like 65, 75 and like, oh, you made it to 85. Like,
yeah, no, it's definitely,
it seems,
I think,
really far away right now, being 31, by the way, that like, whoa, that's like 2 years
yeah,
away.
Yeah, I just
two
turned
lifetimes,
30
so,
like a month ago.
Yeah.
So
two more lifetimes is a lot of living. Although, like,
But I think
we're capable of more.
We are. And, you know, we see it. I love like the, I mean, Into the Blue Zone is perfect. Like it, you see different cultures that practice more of a plant-based diet and clean eating and exercise and breathing and all these things have like the longevity in their cultures versus westernized culture. But, you know, this plant-based movement is growing and we see it every single day. Mm-hmm. And so that combined with like the incredible science and technology that is going to continue to grow exponentially over the next, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100 years. Yeah, human life expectancy is going to go well beyond.
And then hopefully we're not just living in a world with robots or fake animals and we could maintain, you know, sustainable. Yes. Like our life is going to be sustainable. Our ability to breathe. Are the other things around us that once were going to still be there? And I think that's kind of what you're doing an amazing job at, advocating, educating, and leading. So Liz, keep doing it, because it wouldn't be very fun if, you know, you didn't see anything but people in the water surfing, or, you know, really anything related to, if everything was like LA with like a layer of smog above us, that would be the worst, you know. So
yeah, that's what we're working towards, is to really help people to understand like what this world could, what this planet could be. So please do, you know, reach out to Sustainability is Sexy if you have questions or are interested in being involved with the organization in any way. We'd love to have you.
Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up. Thank you, Liz Murphy, the co-founder of Sustainability is Sexy and the head master chef of Santosha Nutrition.
Thank you so much.
Again, you've been listening to a plant-based production, Into the Blue Zone. Check us out on Spotify for great audio recording, or Instagram, or YouTube. Okay, thank you.